Well, thank you for being here. I really appreciate this Sangha. And I've been here a number of times now, and as you've changed and grown, and I've been coming to SBMG for a long time before Iron Bell existed and turned into Valley Streams. So it's been fun to just watch the changes going along, and then to come to my home practice of Zen here with you is really a pleasure. Tonight I wanted to talk about practicing without holding to fixed results. And how do we do that when we're also trying to accomplish something? And more particularly, I want to talk about my recent experience, and some of you also shared this experience, of participating in what we called an election retreat. I was in Carson City, Nevada, and there was somebody from SBMG there while I was there, Joe Countryman. And I know Jim and a number of other people were in Hanford, California. Who else here was in Hanford? A couple of you. Great. Well, so I don't want to give a talk about politicking and activism, but I want to talk about the inherent sort of tension between our practice and a practice of not holding to fixed results and no gaining mind, and the kind of pickle that we're often in our lives. And then the election retreat really highlighted this, of how can you go canvassing to get somebody elected to the Senate. And in my case, we were working for the election of Jackie Rosen to the Senate in Nevada, which she did get elected. But how can you do that without holding to fixed results? The whole point is to win, you know, and we say, well, it's not about winning and losing, but we also are bringing our practice forward. So I wanted to talk about that. And first, I thought I'd just briefly summarize the sort of facts of what was happening, which was that in Nevada, I should say what an election retreat is, for those of you who don't know. It's something that was developed by a group of people at Berkeley Zen Center. I think the first one was in about 2006, and I didn't go, but a group of Buddhists went to a swing district, an election swing district, where they had a chance of changing the vote, and set up in a house that was donated by somebody local. The first one was in Corvallis, Oregon, I think, and somebody who lived on a farm, some Buddhists who lived on a farm, donated their barn and their house, and people went there. And then there was a schedule, which was kind of, first they called it an election session, and then we've changed it to an election retreat to try and be more inclusive of different traditions of Buddhism, and not even necessarily Buddhist, but contemplative practice. And the day is framed by practice, and now we had two periods of zazen and a service and a silent modified Orioki breakfast every morning, and then we had a silent Orioki dinner in the evening and more zazen. And in between, we went to the Democratic Party headquarters and turned into canvassers and activists and people in the secular world. And in we have the house, the place, for about 2 weeks up to election date, and ask that people come for a minimum of 3 days. A few people stayed the whole time, but it was fine for people to come and go as long as they were there long enough to kind of get into the swing of it. So And in Nevada, we didn't know whether Jackie Rosen would win or not. It was very uncertain. And we didn't know until the last minute on election day that she won, which was very exciting and wonderful, even though we weren't attached to results. And in Hanford, the people who went there, we'd organized these retreats some months before, and I was part of the organizing committee for a while there, and we found a place that was donated, and somebody wanted to support us going to Hanford, which is in District 21, where they were trying to elect T.J. Cox to the House of Representatives to unseat the incumbent Republican. And before the election retreat began, we heard that the Democratic Party was kind of stopping supporting T.J. Cox because his campaign seemed like a losing battle anyway, and they weren't going to throw more resources into it, as I understand it. So I was there in Carson City thinking how fortunate I was that I was working on something that there was really some hope for it, and really admiring the people in Hanford who were going there to work, really not being attached to results and just going anyway and really working hard, and how great that they were doing that even so, and I admired them. And then election day came, and T.J. Cox seemed to have lost, and he was way 5,000 votes behind. But all the votes weren't counted, and so as they gradually came in, and the provisional ballots and the ballots that had to be checked, why did the person have a slightly different name on their registration from the ballot and things like that. Anyway, gradually the numbers changed and changed and changed, and finally, it was only about, I don't know, 10 days or 2 weeks ago or something, it was quite late after the election. It was the last one declared. Isn't that something? So he won by 820 votes or something like that. 862 votes. That 62nd vote was one you got probably, Jim. Yeah, and it was amazing. Oh, well, there was also just a really wonderful example of not knowing. And so that was very exciting. So that was the kind of historical facts of the case. But now I just want to talk about what is it like to try to have something happen that where you want to win, and at the same time to accept whatever happens and not be attached to results. And also, what is it like to combine your spiritual practice, a sort of deep spiritual practice that isn't really about things like elections exactly on the face of it, with working in the world for something that's, in this case, quite political, but working for some kind of what you think is some kind of social justice work, or and so how do these things go together? And on the side of not being attached to results, you know, Buddhist teachings tell us that everything is impermanent, and that we our suffering is caused by clinging, and clinging to wanting certain things to happen and wanting things to be other than they are causes suffering, and that we need to let go of gaining mind. And we chant, there is no attainment, with nothing to attain. So that's all good. I mean, I believe in that, those chants, and I believe that everything is impermanent and ultimately perhaps empty of self-nature. And I also know that in our Buddhist teachings, we, in our tradition, in Zen, we take the bodhisattva vows to save all sentient beings, and we are in a Mahayana practice that is reminding us that it's our, each of us can do our very best to alleviate suffering, and that no one is free until everyone is free. And so that's why the bodhisattva doesn't go off to nirvana, but just keeps coming back and being reborn and reborn again in this suffering world to help others until everybody is free and can all go off to nirvana together. Or you can take it metaphorically if you want, about that it's not necessarily about one lifetime after another, but that in this world that we live in, we're all interconnected, and as long as one person is suffering, we're all suffering because we're all connected to that person who's suffering. And I had the good fortune to be involved for a short period of time in the civil rights movement in the 60s. I was in Mississippi in 1964, canvassing and registering voters and things, which was a completely different situation, obviously. But there, the people from the South, the African American people, and the leaders there called our what we were doing the beloved community, and they said no one is free until everyone is free, and they were talking about a certain kind of freedom there, more of this earth. But it seems to me, I really got it then, that no one is free until everyone is free. So that's one reason that this is very consistent with our Buddhist practice, to do what we think is going to help alleviate suffering on our earth. And we do try to succeed in our efforts. It's okay to try to win an election, because at the same time we want to learn that, you know, if we don't win, we can still be glad that we participated in the work that we did. One of my great heroes of Buddhist teachers was Robert Aiken Roshi, and I used to practice some with him. He was based in Hawaii, and he was one of the founders of the Buddhist Peace Fellowship, which I worked for many years, editing the magazine Turning Wheel. And Aiken Roshi was very active politically, and he was a very deep practitioner of Zen and a scholar. And he did not mince words. And when when he was speaking about the first Iraq War, I guess it was, and the last Bush administration, so maybe it was the second Iraq War. Yeah, he wrote, "We face horrible crises. It is surely past time we turn the criminals out, but we can't do that with rhetoric. With worthies of the past looking over our shoulders, let us conspire. Let us breathe together and make it happen, and conspire to keep it happening." So here's a Buddhist teacher saying, let's turn the criminals out. And that seemed very surprising to me and made me think, oh, wow. And I really admire him, and he was very devoted and committed to his practice and to his students. So the acknowledgement of the fact that we are in a difficult situation is part of our practice, and we don't try to say, oh well, don't worry about all this trouble that's going on, because we're just going to transcend it, we're above that, our practice will take us beyond this kind of concern. No, I mean, when we think about working on climate change or something, we don't think that's not our business just because we're Buddhist. And to combine the practice, the spiritual practice, with the work in the world is just so inspiring, really, because then everything seems to come together, and it really is helpful. Each thing helps the other. It helps you to be able to go out and walk around and talk to people about the election when you're framing your day with meditation. And I think it deepens your meditation when you're participating in what is the how life is happening in the planet and in the country. And so it was a very beneficial and inspiring experience for me. And canvassing as such is not a particularly inspiring activity, and it's not a glamorous activity. And it's not really an activity that you would particularly take up for the fun of it. You take it up because you do have a goal in mind. I was thinking about sports and how in sports seem to be about winning and losing, and they are about winning and losing, which team is going to win. But people also say, especially to kids in athletics and stuff, well, just don't worry about winning and losing. Just play for the fun of the game. You know, be a good sport and play for the fun of the game. And people play tennis without keeping score for the fun of it and so on. But you can't really do that. People don't go canvassing for the fun of it. And you can't really imagine traveling to some foreign place or distant county to go get to have the fun of knocking on doors and not even counting the numbers and not paying any attention to what the people said, whether they voted or not. Well, you wouldn't do that. So it really is so bound up with trying to accomplish something that it's good practice in our lives to do something like that and to continue to frame it in a spiritual way that where we know what we're doing matters to us and matters in other ways besides the actual results of the election. So I wanted to talk about some of those ways that it matters, or why we do it. And for one thing, there's the reason I already said about, our bodhisattva vows. We do it to save all beings. That's all there is to it. We're just going to go save all beings by knocking on the doors or whatever. That's an ongoing intention in our practice. And when I first started Zen practice, I was already kind of an activist. And I remember thinking, well, come on, really, get a grip, kids. You think you're going to save all beings? What? And then now I just really appreciate the impossibility of those vows, because the fact that they are impossible means that you don't have to worry that you're going to kind of run out of intentions. You're going to actually accomplish it, and then you won't have anything to do anymore. And there really are statements of intention. That's the importance. I intend to save all beings, and I intend to and my delusional desires and clinging. And I intend to walk through each Dharma gate that comes, and I intend to become Buddha. And you always have the opportunity to sharpen those intentions and follow those intentions, and they can sort of be guides for you as you go along in your life. And so that's one part of, one reason for doing these kind of things like this type of an action. Then another reason is the law of karma, which is something that I really, really love. And one of my favorite things about karma is the sort of axiom that beneficial actions produce beneficial results. And I totally, totally believe that. And it doesn't say, and you're going to see those results tomorrow. You might not see the results. And if you lose the election, then you'll think, well, it didn't produce beneficial results. But it does produce beneficial results. Everything you do, every beneficial action, has some result somewhere and has a fruit that comes along. And you might not be there to see it. But nothing is wasted. No effort to alleviate suffering is wasted. So in that sense, it is okay whatever happens, because somewhere down the line, in ways that we can't even understand, what what your efforts are helping turn the Dharma wheel towards awakening for all beings. Then another thing about it, this positive, is that when you're really working with other people on something that you believe in and joining together, it expands you. I feel this. I feel like I'm being more and more of a whole person as I give myself over to something and as I try really hard to be compassionate and loving and helpful, then I become more myself. I'm expressing my full self more and more. And this is an opportunity for me, instead of just staying home and being as comfortable as possible, which sometimes we all have to do that too. That's okay. But to really be my full self and be fully alive in this life while I'm here, it helps me to be able to be doing something that I really care about and that I hope will be helpful, and to be doing it with others. And then another thing about these election retreats that is just so great, and there's other ways that this can happen, and it happens here in your Sangha in different ways, like the New Year's celebration I was hearing about, that it is so Sangha building. It was really wonderful to be part of a group of people who were working together every day, and they were strangers. A lot of us, we had never met each other before, and there would be maybe about anywhere from 10 to... Well, in our household, there were anywhere from 10 to 20 people at the dinner table on a given day. And we went out canvassing in pairs each day. So you were working with somebody different each day, which was really great. And usually it was somebody, everyone was encouraged to go with somebody they didn't know. So you had this partner for the day, and you got to get to know this person and help each other and say, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Can we go drive around till we find a bathroom? And, oh, should we stop for lunch yet? And to be really collaborating with someone else in that way was great. And then to be working together as the whole group, we had chores we did in the house to help take care of the house of our hosts. And so we were practicing together and doing service together. And it really became a very strong Sangha. Even with people coming and going, the actual container of the Sangha grew very strong and rewarding. And people were being very generous. And I noticed how generosity was kind of... how contagious generosity is. And when people started being nice to each other, everybody just caught the disease, and we all just became really generous. And if somebody needed to volunteer to wash the dishes, there would be somebody doing it, or somebody noticed before they even had to ask for volunteers or something. People were, and besides, it was just, I mean, you might think to yourself, well, I'm only here for 2 weeks, I'm only here for 3 days, I can, and I don't have anything else I have to do now, so sure, I'll wash the dishes. It's different, it's easier to be completely generous in that kind of a container than every day, I'm not going to volunteer to be the one to wash the dishes in my ordinary old life. Why would I do that? I mean, that's a nice thing to do too, but there's this kind of excitement of, or just encouragement and collaboration that was really strong. And so that was another really positive aspect of it. And then I wanted to kind of say something about the Zen of canvassing, which, wait, let me just keep track of the time here now. I'm interrupting myself. We end at 8:45. Okay, so a little bit about the Zen of canvassing, that I started to think, okay, I'm going to make this a Zen ritual, this canvassing. And we were given these sheets with all the names and addresses of the registered Democrats. And each day you would go to a different neighborhood, and you had to go up to each door on the sheet and knock, and then you would check various boxes. You could check not home, or you could check already voted, or you could check, they have a lot of early voting in Nevada, or you could check, has a plan to vote, Democratic, and so, and then these all got tabulated at the end of the day. And at first, and then at the end of the day, when we went back to our house, we had kept our own record, and each day there was a big whiteboard, and they'd write how many knocks today, and everybody would tell how many doors they knocked on, and how many plans did people make to go to vote, and that would get written up there. So I used to hope that nobody would be home, and then I could still check the box, but I wouldn't really have to talk to anybody, because that was sort of it's a little nervous making to go up and knock on a stranger's door. And one day, the woman I was canvassing with said, you know, do you realize that when we knock on these doors, every single time we're interrupting somebody in their life? They're doing what they want to be doing in their life, and we're interrupting them and expecting them to come to the door and talk to us and want to listen to what we have to say. And I was so grateful to her for pointing that out and thinking, yeah, we have to be really humble about this. And so, but what was great was, after a while, I just got into the kind of challenge of it and the surprise of it and the not knowing. And so each time the door opened, it was sort of like, oh, is this a Christmas present, or is this, well, what is this going to be? And kind of curiosity and just wondering, who is this going to be? And so I started to feel disappointed if nobody was home. And people were pretty friendly, and on the whole, a lot of people had already voted. A lot of people had already been canvassed and didn't really need anybody else to tell them about it. And a few people were glad to have somebody to talk to, or didn't know where the polling place was, or something like that. But from my side of it, it was wonderful to see all these different people, and all different kinds of people in different kinds of neighborhoods. And that, I think, is a really good thing for all of us to do sometimes, is to just widen our horizons about who lives on this planet anyway, who lives in this country anyway, all different kinds of people from who I usually meet, and different kinds of neighborhoods and different kinds of communities, and, you know, really shabby, patched together trailer parks that are falling apart, and to very huge developments with manicured lawns and gardeners mowing the grass all over the place, and lots of things in between. And it was really different. And I was walking around thinking, wow, what would it be like to live here? And what would it be like to live here? And to kind of trying to imagine myself into all these different lives. Also, in Carson City, it was beautiful. It's a high, high valley between mountains, and the mountains were all around, and it's about 5,000 feet, and just gorgeous light, and we were staying with a very generous family, a couple and their son in high school, who also hosted us 2 years ago when we were there for the presidential year. And they were just so eager to have us come. And when we got home to the Bay Area was when the fires were getting really bad and the air was really bad. And our hosts, the Thornleys, were sending emails to all of us who had been there saying, oh, we're so sorry about the fires and the air, and if any of you want to come and have Thanksgiving with us here in our house and breathe the clean air, you're welcome to come. I mean, they were just completely kind. And so that's what I mean about this kind of generosity was building on itself all the time. Anyway, I developed a practice of looking at the name on my sheet and saying, okay, this is Guillermo Sanchez lives here. And then I would say, as I was walking up the front steps, I would say, may Guillermo be free from suffering. I tried to remember to do that each time. And then to say it again, especially if I met Guillermo, then I could picture this person and then I could walk back down the steps, whatever happened, saying, may Guillermo be free from suffering. And to remember that I was, that was what I was trying to do. I was trying to help people be free from suffering, and myself included. So I wanted to save time for some discussion. I want to just see if there's something. I would love to hear from the people who were in Hanford and from anybody else who wasn't and has questions or comments. But I guess I just can end by saying that I think something like that activity or it's a kind of faith. It's a kind of practice of faith, because you go off with good intentions and you really don't know if it's helping, and you don't know if you're going to accomplish what you are setting out to do, and but you do it because you have some faith that you want to participate in this way at this time, and that you might have something to offer, and that that's a, it's a kind of privilege in a way, and you can have faith in yourself and just trust that it's what you want to be doing now, and that you'll do your best and you'll give yourself over to it, and that we can bring that attitude to all kinds of things that we do in our lives, of just, well, yeah, I'm doing this because I don't know if it's helping, but I'm going to try to help, and beneficial actions produce beneficial results, so maybe this will have some beneficial results, and here I go. I'm jumping off the 100-foot pole, or I'm walking through the next Dharma gate, and then we'll see what's on the other side, and then I'll face that. But a Buddhist doesn't turn away from what's difficult. So, well, one more little anecdote I'll say is that when we would go to the Democratic headquarters each day and show up there, there was bustling with volunteers and stuff, and we were very well organized, being good Zen-trained Buddhists. You know, we were always on time, and we were always ready to do their bidding and stuff. And we were very effective, I guess. I don't know. I mean, they could count on us for being organized and covering a lot of territory. Anyway, we showed up and, oh, the Buddhists are coming, the Buddhists are here, they would say. So that was kind of fun. So anyway, I would like to know if any of you Hanford people want to share. Yes, Sarah. Oh.
The last day on election night, I did poll watching with another volunteer, and he was inside and I was standing outside, and we had been instructed, you know, you don't say you're with any political party or anything, you don't confront people, you just observe, and if you see anything of concern, you know, these are the numbers you call. So it's getting dark, and this is a fire station. This is our van. It's a population, I think, I don't know, 75 or, but when they have, during harvest season, it swells to over 15,000. So they've got the infrastructure there. And so the person who was the mayor, who was running for office, was standing outside the poll, but he had to stay back a little bit because, you know, he couldn't campaign while he was there. And so being a mayor and a political person, he really wanted to engage me in conversation. He wanted to know who I was and, you know, was I Republican or was I Democrat? And, you know, why was I here? You know, what was I doing? And he said, well, why are you doing this? And I said, well, are you trying to get Republicans elected? Or are you trying to get the Democrats elected? And I said, no, I'm here to relieve all beings of suffering. The look on this man's face, give me a high five.
Really? How great. Good for you for saying that. I wouldn't have had the guts to say that. That's great.
But yes, it was.
Wonderful.
So I didn't do anything political.
Oh, Jim, you've got it. I'll just say quickly that I was in Hanford to spread the gospel. And the gospel I was spreading was, you have a right to vote. And I regard that as a very precious right. And I really want you to exercise that right. And I want to facilitate your ability to do that. And that was my feeling.
Yeah.
And I would go up to doors, and I didn't know how I would be received, you know, at each door. But I was there to spread the gospel. So.
That's great. It is a precious thing, the right to vote.
I was at Hanford also. Thank you so much. You took me back there. One thing that impressed me was the morning after the election, the closing circle. We all believed that our candidate had lost. Pretty big time. And there was no feeling of loss. Jackie, I think, was a little, maybe the local activist who hosted us so graciously. But in the circle, there was no bemoaning, mm-hmm. no complaint, no, oh, we should have, or yeah, nothing sure. like that. It was just sort of a, okay, well, that's that. What's next?
Right. Yeah.
Kind of feeling. And I felt really, and I felt that way too, but I was impressed that everyone was feeling
yeah.
that. And I kind of felt proud mm-hmm. of everyone. Yeah, we did it. We did it right. But I just echo I'm kind of an introvert.
Uh-huh.
But I just, the people were all so, I mean, we all had such lovely people.
Uh-huh.
And it was just so educational in
yeah.
the way that
yeah.
you described, and self-educational too,
mm-hmm.
because that's not something that I really looked forward to doing, and it was exhausting,
yes,
really.
It's really exhausting. Surprisingly so.
Yeah, maybe it is because you're just being so present, and I think that's. Also, maybe part of the way to navigate the tension between not clinging to results and trying to accomplish something is, as Jim said, you're just with that person.
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying to elect TJ. You're just trying to
mm-hmm.
help this person
mm-hmm.
with some information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if
that's good,
you can do that.
Yeah, then you succeeded.
Yeah. Plus, I came back with a whole bag full of walnuts.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
a shopping bag full of walnuts.
Yeah, I've been eating walnuts over at Jim and Karen's house from Hanford. Because you were living in the middle of a walnut orchard.
We were camped in the middle of at the edge of a walnut orchard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Trains? Oh, really?
Right near. Well, that's
oh.
the main railroad.
Oh.
And so the Amtraks and the freights would come.
Oh.
And when the two freights came by at the same time,
oh, my
was
gosh.
No sleeping.
Oh, my gosh. It was really noisy, huh?
After a while, though, I didn't hear it.
A couple of three nights it took, and then it was just like
just
sort of a lullaby.
Yeah. Well, does somebody who didn't go, I would love to hear from somebody who didn't go, because I don't want this to be about, this is a wonderful thing we did, some of us did, but you guys didn't do it, so that's too bad for you. That's not the message I want to convey, but rather, you know, how do you meet this kind of thing in your life? How do you think about trying to help people or do something difficult that seems to matter to you and maybe not having it happen the way you hope it happens, or I don't know, anything that comes to you about this kind of issue? How do you keep going with something difficult when you're not sure of the results?
Well, I went the easy route, which was I called up my political party and said, who needs money? And I want the names of five people that you felt that a contribution would make a difference. And so we sent money. And and then we sat and watched about whether they got elected or not. And they did give me the names of people that were in highly contested elections that were in desperate need of our support. So that was how we took care of it. Not nearly as exciting or engaging, but it took us out of the sidelines and
that's
into
wonderful.
The,
there's so many different ways to help, and that's certainly an important one.
Yeah.
Also, what we did wasn't exactly exciting. Sometimes, I mean, it was really rewarding, but it wasn't glamorous.
This isn't related to the elections, but I was thinking of what you were saying in terms of other kinds of volunteer work. And somebody I was talking to today was saying, you know, I was talking to her about some of the work that some of the work that I'm doing, and she said, you know, this is not an activity, this is a practice. Mm. And so if you can walk into this with that kind of a mindset, that this is not an activity, you know, this isn't like step one, step two, step three, this is a practice. And then the other thing that sometimes if you can get in the right frame, or if I can get in the right frame of mind, is to begin the practice, begin the whatever it is that I'm doing, volunteering, without expectations, but without an agenda.
Mm.
And then not have an expectation as to how it's going to end. Because there isn't always a resolution at all. I mean, you walk in, you do whatever it is you're doing, and then you leave, and you don't know what it is. You know, and
in the middle, too, not have expectations for what it's going to be like in the middle, not just at the end, as you go.
Whether the election was really the end or whether it's just the beginning.
That's good.
Like
it's a lot like life, isn't it? And also, if you don't have expectations, you're much more available for what's happening because you're not, you don't have the screen through of expectations through which you're looking.
Or an agenda,
an agenda. Yeah. That's certainly true of life. Maybe one more person.
I just wanted to appreciate how you were able to transform your fear of knocking on the door to then welcoming, you changed your mind, I guess, right? And how you could greet that person then more openly. And I'm usually, I think of myself anyway as I don't want to confront anybody who, you know, I don't know, that I don't know, I guess. And or has a different opinion than I do. So anyway, I appreciate that. And I was thinking about a conversation I had years ago with my Uncle Don, who actually I loved Uncle Don. And he was very conservative, and we had long conversations on a trip we took together about agricultural practices, shall we say. And we would disagree. And so but then at the end he said, you know, Karen, actually, I agree with you.
Oh, well, that's satisfying.
So that was very nice. So I was thinking, well, I could think of, if I thought of new people, you know, that I was afraid of, or I thought I might have a conflict, I could think of them as, oh, they're like Uncle Don, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
And also I was thinking about, as the helicopters were going over tonight, you know, I did start also saying, you know, may all beings be safe and happy. Well, may they be safe. So, because I was feeling some fear coming up while we were sitting. Anyway, so
thank you. Yeah. That's a good note to end on, to that reminder that we can have that attitude of, we can really nurture that attitude in ourselves of may all beings be safe, may all beings be free from suffering, wherever we're going and whatever we're doing. Not in some sort of holy, sanctimonious way, just let that be a part of how we see people. Yeah. Well, thank you all.